Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Allianz conference call on the financial results 2016. For your information, this conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to your host today, Mr. Oliver Schmidt, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Gail. Good afternoon from my side as well, and welcome to our conference call. As you know, we have three presenters today. Oliver will kick it off and share his views on the 2016 result and our capital management. Then Dieter will explain the numbers in detail. And finally, Günther will talk about our investments. We have scheduled 2 hours for the call. In case that is not enough to cover all your questions, please come and see us at our analyst meetings that we will host next week. And we will host one in London, one in Paris, and one in Frankfurt. That's already all from my side, and with that, I hand over to Oliver.
Yeah, good afternoon or good morning if you are in New York. Thank you very much for listening and your interest. I'm proud and happy to present very good numbers after a very challenging year for us and good news on capital management. The headline for our presentations today is delivery and delivering, and that's what we have been doing for 2016. Now, I don't need to explain to you, like in the press call today, what a difficult environment it has been politically and economically in 2016, and it looks like it's going to continue. Lots of unpredictabilities, and in this environment, particularly with a very difficult interest rate environment, our company has performed really well. Thank you in particular to all our employees and the leaders in the company for great results. Now, what have they been? With 10.8 billion total year results, we are near the upper end of our target range. We have generated 6.9 billion in shareholders' net income, and we are therefore proposing to increase the dividend per share to €7.60. That's up more than 4%. Earnings per share is the same number in terms of increase. It's now at 15.1, and our solvency stands at a very strong 218%. We assume you have some questions around that that Dieter will address later. The return on equity is 12%. It's somewhat down from last year. That is due to very strongly rising equity capital. There's a couple of effects related to that. We're still sticking to our target of around 13. So we believe it's not an issue around earnings. It's actually an issue around balance sheet strength, which we consider to be an extremely important asset in such a very difficult environment. If we turn to page A3, I'd like to highlight that all our segments are delivering. Life and health is now with ROE about 10%, P&C 13, asset management 15. So let me hit the segments one after the other. On the P&C side, we'd like to grow 3.1% internal growth. The combined ratio with 94.3 is getting closer to target. The restructuring of Fireman's Fund that is still impacting the AGC and S results is on track. And we have, after installing a new leadership team in Sao Paulo for LATAM, are making good progress in further improving our performance across the Latin American continent, operating profit significantly improving. And as you will hear later, without some further cleanup in the balance sheet on an old life portfolio that we still book under P&C, because we only otherwise have P&C and health in Brazil, would have been already significantly more positive. The life and health insurance story continues to be very successful. We have told you in November of 2015 that our most important strategic priority is the transformation of our life insurance business, moving it to new capital-light products that are both better for consumers and better for our shareholders. It is happening, and you will see that later. The trend continues strongly across core markets. The new business margin is up despite record low interest rates, and the disposal of Korea strongly benefited our Solvency II capitalization. I think some did not have that on their radar screen, and it has three positive effects. It impacts positively future profitability. It strongly helps our Solvency II capitalization, and it further reduces interest rate sensitivity, which is one thing that is of utmost importance for our risk management team, because that has been impacting us negatively as a sector and also at Allianz. And I just wanted to say it loud and clear, we are committed to further reduce interest rate sensitivity and risk capital consumption. We have a slightly different view on credit spread, which we're going to talk about. So operating profit here in the segment is at a record level with 4.1 billion, and it's very strong. It's also a fact due to the fact that our U.S. life company is doing extremely well, and congratulations to the team in Minneapolis for another successful year. On asset management, we've also told you clearly what the agenda is. PIMCO as a company has decided to rejig its team, find a new leader, and then the investment team was able and capable to focus more strongly on investment performance and outperformance, which has been very strong in 2016. Congratulations. In return, net flows have returned 11 billion in the second half, that's in euros, and also congratulations due to good cost management, the cost-income ratio is now again below 60%. And not only did PIMCO perform really well, Allianz Global Investors delivered an all-time high in terms of operating profits, 543, despite very strong outflows of the equity sector, particularly in the United States. So overall, when you look at the portfolio, yes, times are really tough for all segments, but yes, Allianz has been performing really well. So we're continuing our track record. Page A4 gives you an overview of the last few years of improvements in operating profit, earnings per share, and dividends per share. And as described earlier, we are again raising the proposal for increasing dividends per share to now €7.60, and that comes in addition to a share buyback of €3 billion that we have started today. Now, talking about delivery, we are delivering at the same time on multiple cylinders. We are delivering strong results on our existing business while in parallel changing the company. That's a very hard thing to do. It's a particular stress for our managers, but it's working very well. 8.5 gives you an overview. I don't want to go into the detail. It remains at the heart of our transformation program that we are focusing on bringing customer loyalty to top levels across our businesses. We're making progress here as we are on digital. Thanks for those that visited us in Munich, as we do on technical excellence, on growth engines, on culture change. On page A6, I'd just like to highlight, people are asking and waiting for the big bangs. It's not necessary. We have a track record of continuously investing. Last year, we've invested in Roger. We have done the Zurich-Morocco deal. We have created a partnership with Standard Chartered. But we're not just buying. We've also decided, and you see that it's about cleaning the portfolio wherever it's necessary. So after disposing of the Fireman Fund retail portfolio and AGF in the UK, we have successfully executed the exit for our Korean life portfolio with huge benefits for Allianz. Now that already brings me to something that is probably very dear and important to you, that's slide A7. And let me spend a little bit of time on this slide. We have debated for a number of time how do you think about the commitment that Michael Diekmann has given a few years back on the unused budget for external growth. And we've always said if we do not find appropriate investment opportunities, which we are working on because we want to grow this company, but if it's not possible organically or externally, we are going to be disciplined and return it to our shareholders. We're keeping our commitment. That's another form of delivery. And we're returning $3 billion to shareholders via share buyback over the next 12 months. Again, that has started today. And that is subject to a sustainable solvency ratio above 160%. That is the exact wording, and there's no other detail to bear in mind. We will cancel the purchased share over time. Now, this alone will create an EPS accretion of around 4.4%. If you do a full rate analysis on 2018 numbers, and also if you think about the ROE uplift, you obviously need to have a few assumptions on how this counts, but prêt-à-porter is about 50 to 60 basis points improvement, and that is important to know. Now, going forward, we have decided to simplify and flexibilize our dividend policy in order to be able to return capital to shareholders whenever that is suitable. Very important, because we don't want to run up against the three-year wall and then being asked the last year, what are you going to do with the budget? What are you going to do with the budget? So we don't need to wait for the end of a three-year period. If we don't need the capital, if our solvency remains strong, we can return capital in flexible solutions. It doesn't always have to be a buyback. It can be other ways. And I'd also like to highlight that we are committed to maintain capital discipline, as this first share buyback in our history exemplifies, because we have very demanding earnings per share growth targets and very demanding ROE targets. So these are going to safeguard capital management discipline. And I'd like to mention also that you can see from our numbers that we have extremely strong cash flows to the holding. The vast majority of our earnings are flowing up, so we have the flexibility to continue doing what we are doing. I think we are pretty unique in that. Now, page A8 gives you just a repetition that is often forgotten. We are committing to pay out 50% in the regular dividend with a ratchet, i.e., that we'd like to maintain the minimum level of prior year, even if earnings were to be a little lower. And I think it's important to understand that next to being busy and productive, we've also obviously been fortunate. Now, even if we're not fortunate and you have large net cat or volatility in the markets, we have another 50% of the earnings that we can use to support both growth and flexible payout of excess capital, and if needed, also to support the ratchet. So you have an insurance policy in your hand with our very reliable dividend policy. So let me summarize on page 8-9 what the equity story is that we gave to our investors in November and we have repeated at the Merrill Lynch Capital Day. Allianz is an outstanding downside protection investment. We have a super capital position. We have well diversified. Yes, sometimes one or the other segment is affected by short-term volatility. Overall, the portfolio is extremely strong. Operating profit, CAGR, has been 7%. And we have a very, very high-quality investment portfolio. Günther Thallinger is going to talk about that. It's not just the investment rate grading. We also are building the earnings power through our alternative investments. So you're getting the best of both worlds, a well-diversified portfolio, and investment income above what other people can do. Now, that would already be a rock-bottom value proposition in these very difficult times. On top of that, we have an attractive dividend policy with a 50% payout with a ratchet and very strong capital discipline, which we are now demonstrating. We are honoring the commitment that Allianz has given, and we are buying back $3 billion. Further to that, we have upside potential. We are absolutely committed to achieving a 5% EPS growth. And remember, in 2016, we already delivered 4%, even including Korea, on an organic basis. The renewal agenda investments are starting to pay off. They're helping us, and most importantly, over time to improve net promoter score and have over time to also help us on productivity. Now we're investing a lot at the moment, but productivity gains will have to come over the next few years. And we enjoy scale benefits on the investment side, both with Allianz Investment Management and our third-party asset managers that are hard to beat on a global scale. And while we're doing good and we're talking about it, we'd like to emphasize that this is not a company that is running for quarterly earnings. We're trying to build a franchise that delivers on a sustainable basis to society. Now, this is not for the press. It's also important for our investors. We're really trying to deliver contribution to all elements of society, whether that is around the investment side, energy consumption, or as it is with employee engagement. And we are very proud of that. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Dieter with one final mentioning. That's our outlook for 2017, not to be forgotten. Now, people have said and written some comments that we have a muted outlook. I'd like to repeat, then we have had a muted outlook for the last 3 years. What we are doing for next year is fully consistent with prior years. As you remember, we had a midpoint for 2016 of 10.5 that we've increased 300 million or 3% to 10.8. So it's above significantly the last year midpoint. And we have various numbers in the segments to get to the number with their own midpoint and variations. Obviously, not all will be top and not all will be bottom. So we believe that even in times when the political environment looks really difficult, when economic outlook for Europe might be under stress, particularly in government markets, we remain committed to what you find on page A12, which is the same ambition we have given to you in November of 2015. Get the return on equity to 13%, grow earnings per share 5%, and also improve the health of the company to have our consumers give us 75% top marks across the business and drive up our leadership index to 72%. Thank you for listening.
So, good morning, good afternoon. I'm now diving deeper into the numbers. That is then section B of the overall presentation, and we start on page 3. That is the only page which focuses on Q4 standalone, and then we move to the summarized annual results pages. We finished with a really strong quarter in all segments. Revenues up in total, driven by our P&C segment with an internal growth of 3.6% and also internal growth in life and health. Of course, asset management still slightly negative following the larger outflows in 2015. Operating profits, 2.8 billion, almost 10% higher than a year ago and 23% up on net income with 1.7 billion. Property casualty ended the year with a 94 combined ratio. I would call it a strong organic runoff of 4.9% without influencing at all the strength of our balance sheet. Life new business margin 2.9% with good volumes, a very strong finish of the year. I think it is one of the highest new business values in a quarter you have seen so far at Allianz. The 2.9% new business margin recalculate with quarter end or beginning of the year, interest rates would be 3.2%. And asset management also 640 million operating profit, slightly up over the quarter a year ago. That is certainly a good turning point. PIMCO cost income ratio below 60 and inflows of 6 billion, even a billion better, and in Q3. And I'm allowed to say this, January started at PIMCO very strong with about above 5 billion net inflows in January. So now turning to the overall annual results, 10.8 operating profit, a strong contribution from life and health, where P&C reduced by the falling investment income following the natural decline of our average yield in the portfolio. Asset management, as I said before, still the consequence of 2015 outflows, resulting overall in a net income of almost 6.9 billion, 4% above last year, and then also resulting in a 4% EPS growth. So organically, already pretty close to our 5% target for the year. So when I focus a little bit more on the balance sheet and then go a little bit quicker through the segments, because due to our ad hoc requirement, you had 12 hours more time to read all the details. So I assume you have used this, and then I would focus more on the balance sheet because I think that is of more interest. Shareholders' equity, no surprise, slightly lower Then after the 9 months, falling unrealized gains on bonds, but $1 billion more in unrealized gains on equity investments. You compared to beginning of the year, our liabilities for own pension increased. However, compared to the 9 months figure, we have a lower pension liability. And FX actually contributed also to a further increase of our net asset value. The biggest jump you see in our Solvency II capitalization, and I would then move directly to the next page to have the chance to discuss it in more detail. So there are two ways to look at it. I personally like the simple description first. Look at the 12 months development. Forget that there were 52 weeks, 5 days a week of daily volatility, and just look what has happened over the 12 months. Yes, interest rates lowered over the full 12 months. Credit spread actually increased a bit, and also stock markets went up. So all these market movements we were actually able to compensate by management action. That means refined asset liability management as well as some equity hedging in particular in Q4. So that was a wash. Then the 18% increase from 200 to 218 is just the earnings plus rounded 10 percentage points for the disposal of Purea. That explains over the whole year the full movement of the solvency ratio. When I go into the Q4 details, then we go much more into a lot of nitty-gritty movements. For example, what you from the outside world can not really guess and calculate is how did swap volatility move in Q4, and a key indicator here is the 10-year interest rate volatility on the euro swap. That is 19 points lower in Q4 than in the previous quarter. That it let our group solvency increase by 4 percentage points. Then I think you have in general calculated Korea impact a little bit lower. Well, it's 10%. We had a better capital generation through life profits, high new business value, and, of course, increase in interest rate also reduced the cost of options and guarantees a bit, and then improved and refined asset liability matching as a key driver besides the market movement, what we have seen in Q4. But personally, I like more the simple full-year story, because that is then giving the strategic picture and not trying to explain every movement in the financial market. Moving to P&C business, page 13. Well, roughly the same operating profits than a year ago, because net earned premium pretty flat. Yes, combined ratio 0.3 percentage points better, but we lost 170 million on running investment income, and under other, we had 2015 a little positive impact from the disposal of the Fireman's Fund retail business, not repeated in 16. Therefore, other is a lower number. The combined ratio, I would say, similar. A good cat year as before, actually Q4 almost no cat. In Q4 we have seen in particular on the books of AGCS some special and material large losses, but that is no concentration. That is, I think, just our normal regular business that from time to time large losses are incurring. Expense ratio 30 base points up. That is not yet the reduction in expense ratio we are looking forward to in the future. We have half of it, so a bit more than 10 base points is increase in commission. The rest is also higher investment level we have done also for the change agenda. So our investments are in the change are running at a fairly high level. Runoff 4.5 percentage point for the full year, yes, above our long-term level of 3.7, or even when you adjust for fireman's fund, 3.9 level. So we are slightly above, but we had very strong runoff in some markets, and it's not damaging the future balance sheet. Our accident year underwriting results, so loss ratio, improved slightly over the year and will help us to achieve our 94 flat result or better in 2018. I think I skipped the details on the individual markets as it is probably good for your reading. Also, I would not go into the details of the investment income of the segment because that is very self-explanatory, nothing special in it. Let's move to page 19, the life business and what we achieved there. The Q4 picture looks pretty much the same as the previous quarters. Our shift in mix with about 40% of the new business volume in our capital-efficient products. The main markets here are Germany and U.S. Not only in share, but also in volume overall, our life new business is on a strong level. You can see it on the right-hand side of the charts, the German life business 12% up in new business volume, and the U.S. also rounded 12% up in new business volume, where in the U.S. our fixed index annuity business continues to deliver, and VA is with 2 billion out of the 12 flat compared to previous year. So that means our focus to grow the business is clearly the fixed index annuity business. And overall, for the year, we are still down in present value of new business. Why is it not flat or up? We have two markets which could not repeat their sales successes on unit linked to the same extent. That is Taiwan and Italy. I think Italy, the volume in 2015 was just huge, and this year it is still a high level, but lower. And in Taiwan, the unit-linked market has not really recovered from the low sales following the March-April hit to the stock market. The profitability in our life business, page 21, on 4.1 billion for the year, as I said already in previous quarter, might be slightly above a fully sustainable level. For example, our investment margin, which is up, includes a substantial swing also from basis risk in our U.S. VA business. We cannot expect that this gain is repeating every quarter and every year. So therefore, we are normalizing our life results a bit lower, as you can then also see, including a growth assumption, as we have done it in our outlook figure just explained by Oliver. By countries, who produced the growth in profit? Well, that is the U.S., France, and then, of course, the non-repetition of the operating losses of Korea. That gives actually, I think, the easiest way to explain the increase. Germany produced a high but flat operating profit in 2016. So when we move to the page and a little bit spending time on the value of new business, as I said before, a record level, 1,448 new business value. We are measuring our new business value and our new business margin in following the Solvency II rules for calculating the market-consistent balance sheet. So when you are grossing up this value of new business to make it comparable to other, you would add back the risk margin, which is included in this calculation. You would move to a real-world assumption. And when you then actually gross it up from the discounting effect and ask how much operating profit will this business produce over the run of time of this tranche of new business, you end up with a number clearly north of 5 billion euros of operating profit. In our 2016 numbers, the day one accounting of this new business was a loss of 400 million euros. So that would actually also come on top of a new business value gross up. So that means this value is clearly sufficient to replace maturing life business profits as well as giving us a long-term growth perspective for our life operating profits. Page 25, the usual health check for the investment margin. On statutory liability basis, our yield still 5.1%, unchanged. Minimum guarantee with the changed new business strategy surely and slowly moving downwards, so that actually the gross investment margin stable to slightly up, and the profit sharing to our customers also very much unchanged compared to last year. So not only our shareholders can be very happy about the results, I think our customers should be as well. Moving now to asset management business, I think I have already given the highlights, that is the flow turnaround at PIMCO. Our assets under management are for the whole year more than 100 billion euros up. 31.5 billion comes from the Rogge acquisition. Similar amount comes from currency impact. And then the rest is market value growth coming also from the slightly lower interest rates plus higher equity markets. That gives then the market movement of 47 billion. And then in total, we still had outflows because we have not fully compensated the first 6 months of outflows. Allianz Global Investors, so far every quarter positive, and ended the year with minus 3 billion. Simple explanation is that actually organically the four quarters added to a zero, and the 3 billion outflow was roughly the outflows we had on the Rogge acquisition right after the acquisition, and was part also in our assumption for the business plan of the acquisition. When we move to the revenue page, yes, revenue is down 7% at, in total, PIMCO almost minus 10, Allianz Global Investors a small positive, adjusted for currency minus 1%. But what I think is important is that PIMCO, after the little jump in fee margin beginning of the year, kept it over the quarters pretty stable, which I think is important also going forward. Also shows that the inflows we have achieved are also adding revenues pretty much at the average fee margin of the existing business. So our profits, page 31 in asset management, ended very much at the midpoint of our outlook page we published exactly a year ago, 2.2 billion operating profit, a good last quarter with also good performance fees achieved, not the one-off performance fees we had previous year from the distribution of the Bravo Fund returns, actually very much ongoing performance fees. Also being reflective that PIMCO got a new traction on its performance. 12-month performance on the PIMCO funds was 92% at year-end. I think the three-year was some 86%. So actually really getting back the traction of good customer returns, what defined PIMCO's trademark for so many years. Corporate segment, page 33, nothing really special to report. Flat development on the expenses, a little bit less income on the banking following lower interest rate spreads in the banking industry in general. And our improvement and profit shown under the holding and treasury segment is a lower contribution to our own pension fund. The rest stayed very much flat. Moving to the page 35, the translation of operating profit into net income. We have indicated here what we had in total to consume or to absorb for Korea. Korea did hit our balance or did our P&L with 450 billion, billion would be a lot, that is the local currency, million in the year. Of that contrasts quite a bit to a positive impact in our Solvency II and market value balance sheet of plus 3 billion in total when you add the impact on risk capital and own fund calculation. So that got compensated by some realized gains and losses. We had here some also block trades reported about earlier in the year. The impairments include 210 million from Korea and also some the impairments for our small bank in Germany called Oldenburgische Landesbank or OLB, which we are now accounting for as held for sale in the year-end accounts. The tax rate, yes, looks a bit lower, 1 percentage point, but I think it is at the moment reflecting more or less unchanged tax rates in our major markets, but we had more tax-free realized gains from equities that reduced the overall tax rate by 1 percentage point and helped then also us to achieve a 4% higher net income. And with this, I would summarize 2016 is a year of another year of strong delivery. Fifth time in a row, increased net income and dividend. Very much on track to achieve our 2018 ambition organically, the EPS growth target. The ROE, I think what is in the way that we are a bit rich in capital, but I would consider this as a luxury problem and not a challenge. Combined ratio, I think also moving in the right direction while preserving a strong balance sheet. Our life OEs, 75% are already on an ROE above 10%, and the rest we are getting there. and life new business margin, I think the 3% target is clearly in reach. And with this one, I would hand over to Günther to give you a much deeper insight into the investment results.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, good morning, also from my side. Now about, let's say, the investment portfolio. We are talking about 653 billion of assets, a portfolio that is continuously growing. And I was allowed to start to have the investment entity AIM at Allianz. The portfolio was slightly above 500 billion. This was 2012. So there you can see it is growing strongly. However, it is not changing in the overall structure, and that is very important. The asset allocation, as you see it roughly on page C2, remains fairly constant with close to 90% of fixed income, which is obviously because we are really matching our liability side. Also the overall risk structure of the portfolio remains fairly constant, which you see on the right-hand side, top right-hand side of C2 with the rating structure. Very important for us is that we continue to take out the interest rate risk, or the risk driven by the interest rate sensitivity. You see this is indicated by the duration figures. Again, on C2, bottom right-hand side. We have achieved it now during 2016 to get on the life side, for instance, to 9.5 versus 9.7, which is really very, very close to an almost matching. Now, duration is only one indication, clearly, and I believe it makes sense to indicate or emphasize that we are managing out a larger set of KPIs, and actually we are not managing the duration as such, but we really manage the cash flow profile of the liability side. The portfolio is a very diversified portfolio, as you can see in the second chapter of the slides that we have provided on investments. I will not go through these slides, but it makes sense to mention those here, because if you read those through, you will see how well diversified the portfolio is, especially if one considers the liability side in connection to the asset side, meaning that we have, of course, the various insurance portfolios in these markets that are then reflected on the asset in the asset allocation. Now on page C3, there you see the yield that we have achieved in 2016. It's 4%. I'm just indicating that there might be a different page numbering, but I'm on the page total IFRS yield, 4% total IFRS yield. 4% is what we have achieved. The current yield is 3.3. The difference there is especially realized gains and losses position of 8.4 billion. This 8.4 billion is indeed a fairly big number. That number is a result of our overall investment strategy. It is not a result of we want to especially harvest up to a certain level. What do I mean with investment strategy? That refers back to the duration management, the cash flow management that I indicated before. And in an environment where the rates are fairly low or even decreasing, then any management on the fixed income side has as an implication or an effect this realized gains position. Total performance is 5.6. This leads me already to the next page. The investment result is indeed very strong, we believe, especially if you compare it against Western European peers. The page shows the performance in the range of 2007 to 2015, and it is 50 basis points above the Western European peers. For us, it's very important that we have a very competitive position, not only because the investment result is that strong, that important for the group as such, but also because this drives the attractiveness of the products that we offer. Let me go to the reinvestment yields. Reinvestment yields, economic reinvestment yields, as we show them here, reflect obviously the market environment. That means they are lower than in 2015. They are decreasing. There is not really much that we can do. We have to work within these markets. However, they do not simply reflect the market yields there. We are, as we will show later on, very much into alternative assets because we want to boost the reinvestment yields as much as we can, and we believe with our scale we are in a position to have underwriting capabilities and capabilities to go into alternative assets that help us to keep these yields still at an attractive level. However, not all of the assets we can reinvest into our alternatives, and therefore you see this reflection of the market yields as they are out there. And one should remember here that the year 2016 had a fairly strange overall pattern, which is we had decreasing yields till the beginning of the fourth quarter, and only in the fourth quarter we really had a very strong increase, and we have to work, of course, throughout the entire year. Before I come to the alternative assets, quickly about the margins in the life health business. Margins in the life health business are very resilient, we believe. If you especially compare the business in force figures on a reserve basis, the business in force yield versus the average minimum guarantee is really far, far higher. And that is actually a pattern that you have seen for quite some years by now. So we've are actually quite happy with the achievements there and do believe that these margins are not only resilient, but they deliver quite some buffers. Similarly, on the new business side, I would like to mention two things. One thing is the volume behind the average guarantee of the new business is relatively declining, as Dieter has explained, because we are working on our product portfolio such that we have an efficient capital utilization. That is one thing. The second thing is just a technicality, but important to note, the 2% economic reinvestment yield cannot directly be compared to the reinvestment yield that we showed in prior years, because the economic part is roughly 20 basis points. That reflects the currency hedging costs, and that should be considered there. So if you compare it to prior years, please reduce the prior years by 20 basis points, and then you get to the comparable figures. On alternative asset, let me jump to page C10. There you see the development or the total volume in the various asset classes and the growth versus 2015. What you also see is our total and the ambition. The ambition is 140 billion in these asset classes. In total, what we want to achieve, we are now at more than 100 billion. We grew in 2016 by 15 billion. That is something that you cannot directly see from comparing the figures if you do not consider the deconsolidation of the various entities that Dieter has explained. But it's 15 billion that we are growing there, and that's why we believe 140 billion is an overall ambition that we can achieve midterm. The assets that we have under alternative assets are, as we explained in many discussions with some of you, very, very relevant for us, not only because of the duration pattern, but also because the correlation, or in other words, the diversification effect, is something that makes those assets also very attractive. What I also should quickly mention, simply coming from the alternative assets, because they cover what we call sustainable assets to a certain degree, wind farms or other renewable energy, for instance, is then ESG for investment management. We have now rolled out our scoring. We are working now on more than 250 billion of our assets with that scoring. We do believe this is really strengthening our overall customer value proposition. And in addition, it helps us to identify risks in the investment portfolio. We would not go that far that we would say that an asset allocation that uses also ESG scoring is going to deliver a higher investment result, but we indeed, as mentioned, believe for risk identification this is a very useful tool, in addition to, of course, to the sustainability value proposition that we should deliver. Well, that brings me already to the end with my summary page. I'm not going through that summary page, but I just would like to emphasize once again the size that we have with our portfolio is not only a figure as such, it's really a driver of excellence that we can recruit and develop. And that is important, especially in a low-rate environment, because only with a certain expertise such a portfolio can be managed with that diversification. And we believe we have that all on board, and the figures show this quite clearly. Thank you.
Okay, with this, we would be happy to take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please make sure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Our first question is coming from Peter Elliott from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. I have three questions, please. The first one is on solvency. Can I just confirm there's no change to your target range of 180 to 220, and also that there's no change to your guidance on the underlying rate of solvency capital generation? I mean, I guess just in context, I mean, you're probably now well above the top of your range, I'm guessing, gross of the buyback, and, you know, I'm guessing the buyback drag should basically be offset by your ongoing capital generation. So just a bit of sort of context there. Secondly, on M&A, I guess, I mean, your recent deals have tended to be, you know, friendly from willing sellers, etc., and there's been a lot of press speculation recently about, you know, potential unsolicited approaches. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to comment on that, if you know, on that sort of disconnect, if you wanted to. And then perhaps thirdly, just on the outlook, I just wondered if I could understand your thinking behind the non-life segment, which I guess is, you know, obviously 0.2 billion lower than it was last year. I'm sort of guessing you're hoping for less of a drag from Latin America, an improving expense ratio and organic growth. Now, I know we've got some investment income compression, but I'm surprised that fully offsets the positive. So I'm just wondering if you could talk us through your thinking there. But otherwise, thank you very much for an excellent set of results. Thank you. Thanks, God.
I think I start with the Solvency II question. I did win the internal bet that this would be the first question. Yeah. Our target range is unchanged, 180 to 220%. Yes, the capital or profit generation is some 2 to 3% per quarter. Hard to be more precise, and you are fully right when it takes 12 months to execute the share buyback. We earn it in parallel over time. The outlook question to P&C, and I leave the M&A question to my boss. We have reduced the outlook 0.2 billion. I would put it this way. I think P&C has probably, of all three segments, the best chances to help with the outperformance. We have subtracted just the 200 million investment income, and if we turn around further the businesses you have mentioned, Peter, plus we have another year where we have actually demonstrated that our net cat exposure is maybe a little bit lower than it used to be. We should be in the working and producing results in the right direction. But when you take our full cat load and the reduction in investment returns, then I think despite improvements, the midpoint is very much justified.
Yeah, on M&A, nothing changed, actually. This is quite funny because you always need to ask yourself, cui bono, Peter, i.e., so is an interest in sort of tooting around. If you're not a banker and getting a fee, then it's somebody who would benefit from being a target. And if you are one of the guys that have the strong balance sheets, then you obviously always assume to be an interested bride. Well, we're interested, but we're not obnoxious about it, and therefore the criteria are the same. The first thing, it has to be friendly, yes, should be friendly. It has to be EPS accretive, yes, and it needs to make sense in, strategically, yes. And it needs to be in a market where we have a strong management team and a strong platform, yes, and ideally it is in P&C. That's it.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Our next question is coming from Michael Huttner from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Fantastic. Thank you much. Brilliant results. Well done. 4% and with a buyback, you're well on track. Really numbers questions. On the turnaround potential, could you put figures to, I guess, Brazil and Simon Sund? On the career, so 454 million losses in 2016, how much can I assume this is non-recurring, or how much was offset by maybe gains which are a little bit higher than normal? Maybe you can say a word on Ogden. I didn't see or mention of it. And then finally on cash flow, I noticed in the life embedded value Solvency II kind of roll forward the 2.4 billion capital movement, which would imply, and I know it doesn't really work like that, but that about 70% of your dividend is paid out of life. And I just wondered if that's the right way of looking at it. Thank you.
I think, first of all, we are showing under the P&C result for Latin America a loss of 75 million. The number is very much driven by a really one-off reserve strengthening of a life business which was retained after the disposal of the Brazilian life business, I think some 9 years ago. And that was a book which was retained and which we reviewed over the summer, and then in Q3 and Q4 booked the reserve. So without this one, so when you look really at the true P&C business, because that should not show up in P&C numbers, but it was a composite legal entity as far as I know. So then we would have been already at a close to a zero operating profit for the year. So I think we are turning the corner really in all three markets, Colombia, Brazil, and also Argentina. Mexico is anyway on a good profitability level, so that is not a turnaround story. That is a continued growth story at good profit margins. So how much this is, I think if you want to take for all three and the life run off some small triple-digit number, that is fair. Fireman's Fund continues to be, actually our accident year loss ratios are, I would say, very much U.S. market standard. Where we still are working on is actually replacing very inefficient, expensive IT systems, and that has certainly taken longer than we originally thought. So it is less of we don't know how to do the business. We know it, but it is technically less easy to get there. Korea losses, that would be hard to say. It will not be repeated in 2017. However, I think also some of the realized gains will, I cannot promise that they will be repeated at this level. So therefore, I see this not as a big a positive for 2017. And yes, I did not mention Ogden, but we have taken already some reserves in our UK book for a move in the discount rate in the Ogden tables. And your last question on the capital movement in life, no, it's not correct that life is paying all of our dividend. The highest payout ratio is still coming from our asset management business. Actually, I think they paid in 16, 105% of their earnings. That are the numbers I like. And PNC has also a strong dividend distribution. So it's not that life is the only one, but life is also returning on a very good level. I cannot tell you exactly by heart how Korea did influence the overall movement of this individual number, but I think it is as I just said.
And on the just the PNC payout, was it in the past? I remember, was it 70%? Is that the figure we had this year?
Yes, that is certainly on a run rate, and I think on our cash flows from subsidiaries to holding company, I think we are in a very good shape. Our treasury overachieved its annual target, and that is a good way to handle it.
Thank you.
Our next question is coming from Vinit Malhotra from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Dieter. Dieter, can I just ask a bit about the interest rate gearing from an earnings perspective? Because I think it was a few years ago that there was a presentation you made in London, or Allianz made in London, which suggested that it takes several years for the earnings to start really materially coming in. Is there any change to that, or should we assume that, I know duration is now longer, but is there any intention to change that? Is that a way to put the, maybe that's a better way to ask this question. Second question is, obviously you have commented on PNC, but I'm just wondering whether it was too cautious a target, simply because probably this is the first time that several years that the outlook year on year is lower than the previous outlook. And in this context, I've noticed that you said AYLR is flat. But wasn't it true that in the last quarterly results, we were hearing that the claims inflation was being beaten by the price increases a bit more? If you could just comment on that as well, please. Thank you.
Okay. Vinny, the interest rate gearing on our earnings, I think that is a very much part of the business model. That is not something we can influence as we like. When interest rates go up, look, in PNC, we are turning around, Günther, maybe 20% of the portfolio every year. So that means you have the chance to reinvest 20% of the portfolio, and the speed of this, yes, we can certainly look to speed it up where bonds are already shortly before maturity, and if the reinvestment opportunity is there, our team will for sure do this, and they are doing this already now quite a bit. But by and large, it is driven just by maturities and business model. And in life, the same. We can invest new money, and we can invest matured businesses, or where the steepness of the interest rate curve allows a good trade between turning a short maturity into a longer maturity because the interest rate got even steeper and the long end did raise. That type of optimization we will always do. And in asset management, it is obvious what is happening. First, on a fixed income fund, the market value goes down. That means even if the average fee is the same, that means on a lower AUM, you are earning in the first moment less on a fund which has a smaller market value. That is just the physics of the setup. That is no chance to influence this. But in the midterm, it clearly moves up, and still our Solvency II balance sheet has an interest rate sensitivity towards rising interest rates. So we have a better capital position. We will be easier able to sell new products in life, also new products in asset management. So overall, economics, I would see very positive to interest rates, but P&L will a bit slower follow. In P&C, I don't think that inflation is already our enemy. I think the claims inflation is not really changing at the moment. Yes, now everybody says in Europe are inflation rates up, but when you drill deeper, the negative inflation rates in Europe were driven by lower oil prices. Now you have with a higher dollar and slightly higher oil prices, the cost of energy are driving up inflation rates. That is pretty much delinked from what we pay for our claims. So, and we have seen in 2016, the latest analysis, we have still overall seen a favorable reduction in inflation compared to original reserving assumptions, and that allowed us and continues to allow us to recognize reserve strengths as we show it.
Thank you, Dieter.
Our next question is coming from Farouk Anif from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Firstly, on the Solvency II own funds and SCR movement, I can roughly calculate that the operating capital generation is roughly 5 to 6 billion euros, something like that, post-tax. Is that right? And how does that compare with the holding company cash flow that you referred to earlier? And are there any operating variances in life that we should take out going forward? And the second question, again, on life. In the investment margin breakdown that you calculated, there's this clearly a big increase in the harvesting. And I know that that's an output, not an input, in the way you run your business. But, what risk do you see of that declining quite sharply in the next couple of years? Or is there something that will possibly increase with movement in yield curves and changing in your portfolio? If you could comment on that, it would be really, really helpful. Thank you.
I will pass on the life realized gain question to Günther. Let me start with Solvency II. We have a before tax and dividend an operating capital generation Solvency II of 30 points. Is this fully matched by cash flows? No, because I think the life new business value is obviously a non-cash item which you have to realize over time. Actually, on day one, life new business costs you cash and is not creating cash in most circumstances. So that part is certainly not cash. But as I said before, we have a strong cash flow when you calculate it relative to our IFRS net income, and in the end we are paying out the dividend out of our IFRS net income. And as you all remember, Farouk, we have done quite a lot of excess capital return activities over the last years and continued in 16. So I think we are in a very good cash position, as I indicated before, but I think to save that we could really cash out every quarter Solvency II earnings, that would go a little bit too far, and now I hand over to Günther.
Yeah, regarding the gains realization, you do know perhaps the total figures that we have. We have 8.4 now, we had 7.9 in 2015, and we had 4.3 in the 3 years before that. So that is more the normal level in terms of total investment picture. On the life side, one should actually expect indeed if rates increase that this realized gains position goes down, of course, considerably. That's simply following the approach that we have. Is that a risk? No, this is not a risk because, as said before, it is more a result of implementing our investment approach rather than a form of generating the IFRS result. That's perhaps a final remark to this. One should see that this gains realization not necessarily is always fully into the operating profit because it is, of course, shared with the policyholder. And in that respect, let's say even a big figure should not be seen as a major operating profit contributor.
Quickly on, if I may return on the capital generation, Dieter, would you be willing to give us a percentage conversion ratio, roughly, of earnings to holdco cash?
I must say then that is really a creative new question, so I like it. But before I now start a back of the envelope calculation on it, I think we will try to figure out whether we can really find any logical combination between the two that we can give a rule of the thumb for the future, but I would stay away from an answer here on an ongoing basis. I would only like to add on the life realized gains. You should not forget the situation in our German life business, which is a major part of our traditional life liabilities and also assets. Under the local statutory results, there is a transition with the so-called ZZR actually to build up additional statutory reserves, which is, I would describe it technically, nothing else than moving unrealized gains from the asset side to the liability side. That has certainly driven an increased level of realized gains in our overall portfolio. You have to remember that the German number makes almost one-third of our overall traditional life portfolio, and that the ZZR contribution, I think, are going to peak in 2016 and 17. And that is something which is certainly part also of our investment management.
Thank you very much. Thanks for humoring me on the cash. Thank you.
Our next question is coming from William Hawkins from KBW. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thank you. On your change of definition for operating profit, I'm now ignoring restructuring charges. Just a numbers question. Should we still be penciling in as a normal expectation a couple of hundred million a year we've seen in the past? And then more strategically, I guess you're deliberately sending maybe the positive message to your colleagues that they shouldn't be scared to invest in growth by removing that from a performance metric. I mean, is there any material way that might manifest itself in terms of company behavior? And then secondly, could you just highlight for us this year life markets that you think are going to be getting particular attention around your 10% ROE target? They could already be above it, clearly the ones that are below it, where you expect there to be the most kind of attention for either earnings or for capital release? Thank you.
William, I somewhat missed your first question on the operating outlook
What was your link between the restructuring expense and behavior?
Oliver here. I think the question was, given the signal on the change in definition, is as also is signaling a change in strategy in terms of restructuring our business.
And then I got it right. Thank you. I think indeed we remove it from the operating profit because the operating profit is used internally also for our target setting process. As you know, it is part of the management target setting system, and we want to encourage people to constantly think about changing their business, and the target setting system should not be in the way that people are stopped doing what is right to drive the future. That is really to get more speed into the organization and get the people also more looking at opportunities where change could help to a positive future. The 10% ROE target, well, we have not given a list there. It would be actually also a bit unfair to my colleagues in the countries who are at the moment not yet on the 10% level, because they are all working hard and have given us a lot of high hope that they are getting there. Therefore, we should wait with the bashing until we have 2018 and they missed it.
Okay, thanks. And sorry, just to come back, in terms of the numbers on the restructuring charge, should we inevitably assume that that line item could be increasing because you said to people it's fine to be investing? Or should we?
Yes, that line item should be increased, but I'm not expecting jumps to huge numbers, but certainly growing. I think we had some 100 million in last year, and currently we see the same level, but I think we have now the change, and there could be a bit more coming towards the next quarters.
Okay, thanks very much. See you next week.
Our next question is coming from Nick Holmes from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Thank you. Two questions. The first is, I wondered how concerned are you by the EIOPA requirement to disclose Solvency II without the long-term guarantee package. I'm sure you can't give us any sort of ratio of what it would be like, but can you give us any idea of what the ratio sort of range might be? And then secondly, Oliver, just wanted to come back on acquisitions. I know you said nothing has changed, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you have indicated in recent interviews that you are looking at large acquisitions. And I think that is a change, is it not? I wondered if you could give us a bit more color on that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Nick, thank you. Oliver here. It came also up this morning. That is actually a misunderstanding based on an interview earlier where the question was, are you not investing or trying to invest and buy something in the U.S.? And then we basically said, well, that is very challenging because in the U.S. the valuations are very high for the market relative to Europe. And if you want to do something in P&C, you would need to go very large. And then I said, and that's why it's very unlikely. Now, that was turned around and to say, So since you need to be large, then they're going to do large. So that is a little bit like the gag of buy and sell, the chart that you know. And you say buy and then sell is coming out at the end. Cut a long story short, we remain disciplined the way we are, and our balance sheet allows us to do both large and smaller. But what we are needing to do is to have transactions that make economic sense and that we can handle. And these criteria have not changed. And then on IOPA.
Sorry.
Yeah. And the other comment, as I said earlier, there's lots of speculation driven by people that have low share prices, and we always come up as the guy that might be interested, but we'd like to have a nice bride. Okay? So Dieter will talk about long-term guarantee.
Yeah. I think actually our balance sheet is the best long-term guarantee.
I think the EIOPA requirement that I think it's somewhere mid-May that all legal entities in the Eurozone have to give their full details on their Solvency II balance sheet and assumption setting is a good step in transparency. I'm really looking forward that there is more transparency in the Solvency II regime as we currently have. Am I concerned about it? No, because we are not using a balance sheet transitional and the VA, that was part of the long-term guarantee package, but I think it got diminished by EIOPA redrafting of it in a way. I think the industry should have got a much better way to handle it because the credit spread we can use under the VA is substantially lower than the credit spread we are experiencing every quarter in our results. So it is really a small recognition of what we achieve and what any insurance company achieves. And the U.S. insurance industry is clearly benefiting from recognizing 100% of their credit spreads, and Europe has to live with a small portion of it. So I think any transparency will help also to drive a fair competition between Europe and the U.S., and I think also a fair transparency between Allianz and its peers.
Thank you very much for that. Can I just follow up very, very quickly? Dieter, on the long-term guarantee package, is there any concern that the transparency will work against both perhaps yourselves, but also the industry in lowering ratios to levels where people might get concerned? And the second question, Oliver, sorry to pester on this, but just very, very quickly, are you saying that you rule out large acquisitions or do you not rule out large acquisitions?
Yeah, I'm not concerned about our solvency ratio and the transparency. I am looking forward that this is a positive, in particular when I consider this a very unfortunate debate about the German life insurance industry, and I think I'm really looking forward to the transparency, and maybe some of you have to adjust their comments.
Talking about the just in case, so let me repeat. We have no predefined size that we are looking at. We're looking at strategic fit.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed.
Our next question is coming from Michael Head from Commerzbank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Three questions. First, on the expense ratio in P&C, which was, very high, and you mentioned that it includes some investments. Can you talk a little bit about these investments? Can you also give us kind of a number which may or may not in the future reduce, by which the expense ratio may be reduced in the future? Second question, new business generation in life in Germany was very strong in the fourth quarter. Can you tell us from where it comes from? Is it more single premiums or more recurring premiums business? And is it more new or also does it include traditional products? And also regarding German life, you mentioned that there was a burden from the policyholder crediting in Germany in the fourth quarter. Can you talk a little bit about that? And last question regarding the ZZR. You just mentioned that this you expect to peak in 2016 and 2017. Do you say that because you assume that the regulation or the legislation is going to change, or can you say that without a change in the legislation regarding ZZR requirements?
That was this a long question two or already including question three?
It was already question three.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Michael, thank you. Expense ratio, P&C. Well, over the whole year, our admin cost ratio moved 10 base points up. So that is a per mil of 50 billion. Yes, that is still a large number, but it is actually quite a number of projects we are doing for the renewal agenda, and it is whether it is the customer centricity to move up net promoter score, whether it is our digital agenda, there is quite some change, or implementing technical excellence. To give you a precise number, I have then really to add up quite a number of details, but it is roughly explaining the 10 base points up in total. There is the new business in life, and in particular in Germany, we are in 4Q. It is roughly half-half between recurring, but difficult to say, because under the German measurement, it is half-half between recurrent premium and single premium. In recognizing the revenues, of course, single premium is very much the dominating part. It is very strongly driven by our new products. Otherwise, we would never get for the whole portfolio the 40% out of capital efficient products. And I think our page 19 indicates this. We have in Germany a higher share in the capital efficient products than overall. That is 42%, and only below 20% are actually still traditional products. Yes, you are right with your observation. We have allocated a higher share of the profits in Q4 to the policyholder. Q4 is always a bit the catch-up quarter to average out the whole year and align it also with the statutory result and the real payout to the customers. So therefore, that is always a little bit of catch-up. Therefore, the numbers are not stable over the quarter. No, my assumption about ZZR peaking is actually more the assumption how the roll forward of this average interest rate is moving. So it is not assuming any change by law or formula or whatsoever. It is more, I would say, a rough guessing how this impacts are moving forward. And that is just a slowing in decline of the interest rate curve, so nothing else.
Okay, thank you. Regarding the expense ratio in P&C, the 28.7% for 2016, I think it includes more than just the 10 basis points investments into the renewal agenda, right?
The rest is commission increase. I said this before. Sorry that I did not repeat myself.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Michael, Oliver here, just as because the underlying question is, are we remaining committed, despite the surge, to drive down the traditional business? And I just wanted to be very clear, there is just an acceleration, not just a commitment, there's an acceleration of an increase of risk protection, unit-linked, and in particular capital-efficient. And when you, I think your question reflected the fact that in the past we were very strong in the change in Germany around the retail portfolio, and in the corporate portfolio we were a little slower. That was not because we don't want to, but the issue is you have ongoing client relationships and contracts with corporations that take a while to change. But the direction is everywhere the same. We're going to more capital efficient products because it's actually better for consumers. It's not just better for shareholders, it's better for consumers. Gives them more choice, it gives them more yield. So it's actually unabated, and our German colleagues are doing an outstanding job to drive further in the right direction. And that is what we want to see overall, why sort of revenue are still slightly down as we are moving from the old world to the new world. You already can see in Germany how big the success is. Once you have the right platform of products and services, we will accelerate in the future into the new direction.
Thank you very much.
Our next question is coming from Andrew Ritchie from Autonomous. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, hi there. Some very quick questions. What funds are driving the inflows at PIMCO? Is it still mostly the income fund that was the particular flagship success most of last year? And in relation to PIMCO and asset management division, what are your sort of base case assumptions for 2017 behind the forecast? I mean, last year you were willing to give us, I think that you said you'd get to break even or positive flows by the second half, which you did. What's your kind of working assumption for 17, both in terms of flows and performance fees? One other quick question. I just want to understand, clearly the balance sheet is very strong from a Solvency II perspective. Your debt capacity on a Solvency II basis is obviously very, very large. But I suppose I'm just trying to understand, what's the binding constraint on your debt capacity? Is it the IFRS gearing, which is kind of flat year on year? And maybe if you give us a number as to what you think your debt capacity is. And the final question is, you look like you've hedged equities more in Q4. Will that have a P&L impact, increase in volatility from associated derivative noise? Thanks.
Andrew, I start with PIMCO fund inflows. You can look at it from various angles. I think what is good in Q4 is that we have actually seen good net inflows in the U.S. It is still the old funds, therefore I think somebody asked me early this morning that total return fund continues to see outflows. Yes, correct, but it is clearly outrun by the newer product categories. And it is also, when you look at customer groups, we see the stronger inflows in separate accounts. So that is a bit how I would characterize it in total, so various things. To give an outlook for the year, well, certainly we assume that the current situation continues. Active credit, I believe, has really a good outlook. Volatility in the market, yes, slightly raising underlying rates, more steepness in the interest rate curve. I think that are all good points for an active credit manager. So I think PIMCO is well positioned for the current environment. Your question on what is really limiting our leverage, in general, we are still fairly conservatively leveraged. We are not going to the maximum. With our current rating, the bottleneck is Moody's calculation and requirement for our current rating. Under Solvency II, indeed, we have substantially more room to go forward. There is this interesting Tier 3 rule, which would really allow us to leverage up a bit. Under S&P, I think our capital position, I did not mention this earlier, is very strong, and also the financial leverage would be less binding than Moody's. You had another question, Andrew?
Did you hedge equities in Q4? The equity sensitivity went down. And is there an earnings impact from that going forward?
I'm glad to pass this on to my new colleague.
Yes, it is indeed the case that we manage our equity exposure, of course, to also optimize our overall capitalization under Solvency II, and you see this in the sensitivities, and we believe we can do this very well with the know-how that we have internally with AGI, but also at companies like AZ Life in the U.S., I believe this is basically the answer to whether we hedge or we don't. Yes, we do. I'm just getting costs was also a question there. If we now are going to really illustrate what kind of fee load we have on these structures, we really start to make those very transparent. We actually believe that we have a little bit of a competitive edge on that side, and therefore we are not going to explain that. Sorry.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is coming from Roger Franz from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my question. I have two little questions. First of all, last year you disclosed the risk capital breakdown by risk category in your presentation, and I no longer see that in this year's presentation. So my question is, how actually has this changed in 2016, especially in the context of the Korean sale of the Korean life business? So can you give us a bit of more detail how this risk profile has changed over the last year? And second, it's a bit of a follow-up to Andrew's question in terms of leverage. I understand that Moody's is a binding constraint for your leverage. I also see that you increase your sub-debt over the last 2 years or 3 years quite significantly, also when you take into account that you called $1.4 billion of sub-debt today, which is already refinanced, issued $1 billion in January. Do you have a kind of a specific target range that you aim for? Thank you.
I think overall the target range, as I said, is driven by the Moody's constraint. Otherwise, we don't have a specific target range. But when we can use this in a different form, we would also do. At the moment, we had the feeling that buying something more at this favorable market conditions is a great long-term deal. So therefore, we did this very opportunistically. The risk capital breakdown will be for sure published in our annual report as every year. So that document is being published soon, and I would ask you for the patience to do the specific reading there, or when you need to do it faster, call our investor relation team and you get it earlier.
Okay, I will. Thanks.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, you may press star 1 to ask a question. Our next question is coming from Edina Ronzinger from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi there. Two questions, please. Going back to the M&A topics, you highlighted that you are looking at opportunities in P&C. Would you consider a composite business? And the second question is, when you are considering the size, how important for you to maintain your current rating and stable outlook? Thank you.
Dieter has given you so many good answers.
I think it's certainly the rating we clearly want to maintain. We are selling a AA security to our customers. It is important for our large industrial customers on the P&C side, but personally it should be much more important for the retail customers who trust us our money for their pension years, because there you need to be sure that you get your money back with return 50 years from now, and that people should be really focused that they have a high quality and highly rated balance sheet, which helps in their for their old age provisioning. Yes, the composite M&A question is a very obvious one. Sure, when you find something interesting in P&C in Europe, there are most likely a life balance sheet coming along with it. Yes, from our strategy and business interest, we have enough life balance sheet in Europe. We can cover every part of Europe with all life products, and we don't need more life balance sheets. But if the overall deal is attractive, then you have to take it, or you will not get the P&C part. So it is it has to be taken into the overall calculation, and then you decide whether the mix and the price makes it or doesn't make it. It is a rational commercial decision that is less than a strategic decision.
Very good, thank you. So you are basically saying whatever M&A opportunities you are going for, you want to maintain your rating with stable outlook. Just to confirm, with stable outlook.
Yes, I think an acquisition which destroys our rating, that the question is what value you are creating with this. I wouldn't see this as compelling.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you.
The next question is coming from Michael Oettner from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Oh, my lucky day. Thank you so much. I was still typing my question. So one was just these little points again. The you said U.S. basis risk, you've made some money, and I just wondered how much. And on the FFIC, you said the item which was a cost this year and might not be going forward is the IT, and I just wanted a figure for that. And then in terms of general philosophy on capital management, you know, this kind of more flexible 50-bit envelope which you can review every year, not every 3 years, and the idea that you would like, let me put it in the extreme, compete with Munich Re in terms of being a big cash return company with a kind of billion annual buyback and a huge dividend, or is the idea instead that you would have the nice dividend that we see at the moment backed by high ROEs, in other words, high ROEs meaning more earnings growth? So is capital management designed to return cash, or is it designed to increase your ROE? And linked to that, I still don't understand why the ROE actually went down from the last year to this year when everything else seemed good. Thank you.
Well, Michael, the swing in the U.S. basis risk is some 155 million, and it is roughly also the profit from the basis. No, that is the swing. It was it was a year ago a small loss, and this year it is a profit. Why is the ROE down? Well, our net income is 4% up, and very simple, our average equity is more than 4% up, driven also by changes in FX. And for example, the boost in the equity markets at year end, which is a nice problem to have, created a billion more after tax, after policyholder share in unrealized gains in equity. And as we are calculating our ROE excluding unrealized gains in bond, so that's the bond movement doesn't play a role for our disclosed ROE, but obviously the unrealized gains in the other investment classes, also the unrealized gains in our real estate portfolio went slightly up with a further increase in real estate pricing. So actually, it all went up for good reasons. As I said before, I really see this as a luxury problem and not as a drama which we cannot manage.
Very good.
And Michael, the answer on capital management is a cyclical one, not a fundamental. So we don't, if you're implying do we want to put ourselves on runoff, the answer is not. We would like to grow the business organically and inorganically, and but since we do not want to have capital sitting idle and accumulating it over 3 years, so that over time ROE and capital returns deteriorate, we want to give ourselves more flexibility. The other one is the signaling function, because quite a few investors were getting itchy at the end and says, is the share buyback coming? Is it not coming? So we want to remove the uncertainty around that. You know, having fewer handcuffs and straitjackets is helping our ability to manage. The discipline will come from the targets. Let me repeat that. We have given ourselves in November the ROE targets and the EPS targets, and they'll make sure that management is incentivized to keep capital efficiency very high.
But the on the ROE target, I mean, the EPS, you're there, or you, if we can calculate, you're getting there. That was all my little questions and stuff. The ROE target, as you say, it's a luxury problem, but it seems to be drifting further away. Anyway, it's just a remark. I'm sure it's a luxury problem, and
you'll enjoy dealing with it. Yeah, but Michael, we have given you some sensitivity initially that the share buyback already is adding a significant boost to
50 bits. Yeah, of course.
All right, and then to ROE as well.
Of course.
Now
yeah,
we have to always say, when are the shares really bought? When are they really nullified?
No, of course.
But we'll get a double bang for the buck on that.
Fantastic. Cool. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. After we have now made it to the second round of questions, I think for the sake of everybody, we should come to an end and close this conference call for now. Again, let me remind you there will be more opportunities to ask questions next week at our analyst meetings. So with this, we say goodbye to everybody. Thank you for having joined our call, and we wish you a very nice weekend. Thank you.
Thank you for your support, guys. Keep on buying our shares.
Thank you. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference call. Thank you very much for your participation. You may now disconnect.